Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
On the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a pack of the beast in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Gad, what are the Long Box guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very favorite friends since I was a very little kid and a new friend. Josh, how you doing today, and what are you drinking?
I am doing fantastic. I'm going to geek out about this beer a little bit. It's probably my favorite stout in a while. And it's called We Are Made of the Same Stardust, which just sounds delightful anyway. But anyway, it's a 10.5% Imperial Milk Stout from Treehouse, and it is chocolate and banana. And it's fucking delightful.
It's so hard not to sing the banana part of the Gwen Stefani song every time you say banana.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Stacey, how you doing? What are you?
I am doing really well. Thanks for asking. And I'm drinking water, but I switched it up. I don't have the Frankenstein cup this week. I have a cup that I thrifted on a trip to Connecticut from the Jekyll and Hyde Club in New York City. So
she's just taunting me about being in Connecticut. You guys noticed that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Didn't have to have that state in there, but she was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw that in there to fuck with Mike. Thanks.
No, I wasn't. That was not intentional.
Not intentional. Then I'm disappointed.
I was subconscious to giving you shit.
Yeah. I want you to plan the shit you're going to give me.
It's apparently, I didn't know this when I bought the cup. I just thought it was cool. Apparently, it is like a monster-themed bar. A friend of mine was telling me it's kind of a tourist trap, but it's a thing you see once. They have, you know, monster themed cocktails, they have entertainment, and I think a haunted house, or I don't know. Like, it sounds fun.
I'm all in. Yeah. Mikey, how you doing? What are you drinking, pal?
I'm doing well. I'm drinking some Eagle Rare whiskey out of my Johnny Skywalker glass, courtesy of geekorthodox.com.
Excellent. And last but certainly not least, my good friend Tommy. Tommy, what you got over there, buddy?
I've got some great King Street Scotch by Compass Box, and it is delicious, and I'm drinking it out of a Knob Creek glass.
Excellent. Today I am drinking a Canadian Club because there was a handle of it on sale for $20. $20 for a handle. You can get a handle on that right there. I also just want to give a little quick shout-out to Bourbon, Bullet Bourbon. Tommy, you like Bullet Bourbon, right?
It's not my favorite bourbon, but
I have been to Bullet Bourbon, and their distillery tour is fantastic.
I like their wine.
I think they make everything really well, and it's all great. It might not be my favorite, but I really like them. And also, Bullet Bourbon has been helping bartenders out around the Massachusetts area with a little bit of money, just actual money. Like, if you're a bartender, you can write to Bullet Bourbon, and they've been helping people out that are financially strapped during this time. So I always like to give a shout-out to people doing it right, and Bullet Bourbon, guys doing it right over there.
Nice job, Bullet.
Speaking of doing it right, Keyless Segways, The Boys, Season 2. I think they did it right. I had a good time. A lot of fun, and we're going to be talking about that. I see a couple of frowns. Let's 318 this thing real quick round the horn. Season 2, Mikey, 318.
No, we were frowning at your internet connection.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what we were all frowning at.
All frowning.
Yeah, you.
The internet.
It's just horrible. Horrible,
Johnny,
sir.
Internet Dorchester, terrible. You sounded like an underwater robot throat goggling a cock monster.
And not a classy cock monster either.
No.
This is
like,
one who has like
Eddie overpaid for the cock monster in the ghetto of San Francisco.
It's like it's bent at weird angles.
No problem. I'll tell you what, Mike, why don't you take over the hosting duties this time around, and I'll try to answer quickly and without taking up too much time.
All right. Well, thank you, King of the Segways. We're going to talk about The Boys 3-18. What did you guys think of season 2 of The Boys?
There were definitely peaks and valleys to this season. I think on a consistent basis, it was not as good as the first season. I think there were peaks that were better than the first season. And really kind of the low for me was the finale. So I'm going to give it it's a 14. Like, I really kind of want to give it a 15, but the finale kind of took the wind out of my sails for me. So I'm gonna ride it out on the 14. I'm riding out on the 14.
All right, LT, give me your spoiler-free 3-18 on The Boys season 2.
I'm also gonna give it a 14. It felt like Amazon ended the season with okay, we could leave it here, or maybe we could leave it open for another storyline. But they didn't really give it a definitive sort of, like, this is where we want it. They sort of left it a little bit of room for expansion if they wanted to do another storyline. And I don't know, it felt like some of the things they did weren't necessary, and I don't know. I just feel like it was a 14.
Stacey, tell LT why he's wrong.
Because he's a moron.
I was going to give it a solid 17. I really enjoyed this season. There were a lot of things about it that I loved. I guess there might have been some things I wasn't super into, but for the most part, I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I get the criticism, I do. I don't know. I always
you realize there's only one point better than a 17. That's an 18. Like, you gave it, like, you were like,
you were like right up there. You're like, this is almost the best.
You're not like, kind
of
like.
She understands how a scale of 3-18 works.
I'm not sure. I'm
stop mansplaining D&D stats to her.
Verbal explanation does not match your score.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that there was a right answer when it is an opinion.
There isn't. But you came in as expected. Like,
Stacey,
all
your
kinds
answer
of
is always the right answer when it's your opinion.
Exactly.
Like a violent tornado of, you know, awesome adjectives for a 17. I mean, 17 is like amazing.
Speaking of violent tornado of adjectives, Tom, what do you got? 3-18.
He's dead. Is he still here?
I'm still here, and let me just say, Josh, welcome to level 3 at the gatekeeper level for mansplaining.
Gatekeeping. People have gatekeeping adjectives. She's not an adjective. Just get fucking over it. It's not fucking gender.
She is a noun. I will give you that.
It does now. I mean, now that I mentioned it, it does.
I give it a very solid 16. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed all the Billy Joel references. I had a great time. It's the exact TV show I wanted to watch. Crazy superhero over the top. LT, you are as high or as stupid as a kite. Because they dangled the next season so hard in the last 5 minutes of that show.
Yeah, they practically had to be the script of the next season.
There's
like,
a roadmap in
the next season on my face.
It's a GPS signal, you fucking idiot. What are you talking about? There's no... They left it kind of open for the next season. They left it perfectly drawn out for us for the next season.
It was a kicked-in door.
Did you see the last 5 minutes?
I did.
Did you see me?
I rewatched it tonight.
I can't see you, Tom, because your camera's off.
No, we're disappointed, though.
Let me explain why LT and Tom are both right. Because I gave it a 15. Josh is correct. I don't think it was as strong as season 1, but I don't think it was a bad season overall. You can't really judge it by what it's setting up for season 3. We're just judging just this season. So I'm going to go with a solid 15. I wanted to give it a 16, didn't quite make it there. But, again, I didn't have problems with the ending. In fact, when I was watching it, I looked at my wife and I was like, are we watching The Boys still? I was a little confused, but that would be fall into the spoiler warning. So here it is. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Right. If you have not watched season two of The Boys, one, I can't believe you're listening to our podcast. And two,
I can't believe you're not doing The Boys.
Stop, go out there and watch season two of The Boys and then come back and listen to this podcast because we are about to spoil the shit out of it.
Who is?
Well, I think...
The spoiler, Mike!
Yeah! Jesus. Oh, you Stop fucking set me up and I didn't...
Do. You get to do goddamn voice. Terrible. Terrible.
You set me up for a layup and I threw it into the stands. I tried to alley-oop the guy selling beer. That
you
is how
like
bad.
You hit like a volleyball.
Oh, my God. Well.
Do it on the ground.
I just want to say one thing. If season three does not have Tech Knight fucking everything, I'm going to be very upset because they have mentioned him multiple times. They are just cock-teasing me, literally, with Tech Knight. Those of you who haven't read the series, Tech Knight is the best part of The Boys. He is a Batman, Iron Man ripoff who has a brain tumor and just likes to fuck holes. It doesn't matter what kind of hole it is. Oh, and after he starts molesting people by accident, I'm going to say, he goes on the hero's journey. And I hope they show that in season three. They had kind of set that up. But let's go back to the boys themselves. Let's start. We'll go one character, each character, right, and talk about them, some of the things we liked about what happened to them this season, some of the things we didn't like that happened, and talk about their individual story arcs, because everybody has one.
I'd like to start with my favorite character, who didn't get enough airtime in this show, and that would be the Terror.
The Terror, yes, he finally got introduced.
Finally got introduced, but he did not get enough airtime.
I did like that he still had the fuck toy, the fuck pig.
Did still had the fuck pig. He did still get to fuck something.
Yeah.
But he did not really get all the airtime that he should have had.
It's true. I was thinking Black Noir was going to kill Terror.
That's what I thought, too. I was with you on that journey. I was like, oh, this is it. This is not just like... We're going to turn this show on its ass if he kills fucking Terror. And Butcher is going to go batshit crazy for the second half of the season. He is going to turn it around, and I can't wait to see it. Although I never want to see a dog die. The dog should always kill the bad guy, because I love dogs. But still.
It was going to be Butcher, the John Wick story.
It was, yeah. That's what I thought. And it would have been really funny if for like maybe half or maybe one full episode, they just replaced him with Keanu Reeves right after the dog died and just pretended like nothing had happened. Like, that would have been amazeballs. Like, I was like, I was all in on that.
What I would like way more is if the Butcher got killed and the dog did the John Wick movie.
I could be down with that.
I'd watch that for an hour.
I'd watch, oh yeah. I'd watch that for more than an hour.
Does the dog have a voice? Like, does it talk, or is it...
I would imagine the dog has a little, like, player attached to its paw, where whenever he was about to finally kill the villain, it would just replay Butcher saying, fuck it.
Yeah. Or the dog could only say one thing in English, and after he murdered everybody, he'd just be like, whoa.
So, like Doug from Up, but...
But also John Wick, yeah.
Also John Wick.
This is movie practically writes itself.
I know.
All right. Well, that is a perfect segue for talking about the other character, Butcher. What did you guys think about Butcher trying to reunite with Becca and his journey throughout the season? Is he the hero of this story? I know those of us who read the comic know he is definitely not the hero of the story. No. But is he the hero of the season?
And he definitely has a hero's journey. I mean, in terms of he goes from doing anything he can to be with Becca and fuck the kid. Like, it doesn't matter about the kid because he's not mine anyway. To, oh, wait, this is not the thing that would make her the happiest. And, yeah, I mean, I think he definitely went some places and not acting like he didn't care about Huey. And, you know, he's just, he does. Like, he's a softie, even though he wants everybody to think he's big and bad and doesn't love anybody.
I think he's definitely, he gets on the train. I think he has a hero's moment. I don't think he's quite made the journey yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I did like...
But...
I think I liked what they did with him more in the second season than I did in the first.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree with you.
Even though he, you know, we all... At the end of the day, some of it, we just want to see Butcher be Butcher, but we want to see that directed at heroes. And so they did a really good job of making him very acceptable on the human side and not acceptable on the hero side for this season. And it sort of, I think, sets it up for the walk and the dance they're really going to have to do with the character if I think what they're going to do next season holds true.
So in season one, Huey's the main character, right? We're viewing the boys in that whole world through Huey's eyes. But this time, Huey's not really the main character. I would say that it's Butcher's story this season. And his arc comes to a completion after Becca, who he was willing to fuck everybody over for, right? He did not care at all about anybody, even... you know, turning in his friend's brother over to the CIA just so he can get Becca's address, right? He does not care about anybody else in the boys or Wales. But when Becca gets killed by her son accidentally, when Butcher picks up that crowbar, I was like, oh, shit. It's on like Donkey Kong because he is about to take that crowbar to this kid because that is what he did in the comic book to the to Becca's child, the small baby. And I thought he was about to do that again, but all of a sudden he's picking that up in order to protect the kid from Homelander. So I think that is where his journey goes. He suddenly realizes that it's more than just what he wants. And so, yeah, I do think he was the main character of the season. I think we're going to see the tragedy of the Butcher character play out next season. Now that he doesn't,
I think so too, yeah. You're calling it, Mike. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, even if he was really going to stay on that hero's journey, he wouldn't have just turned over the kid to the CIA. He still can't fully become that hero that you would hope he becomes. So you're starting to see that journey darker and darker and darker.
So I really think what we get to see as people, if you were people who have not read the comic and you were just watching the show, we get to see what leads up to what I would consider issue one as appearing as first episode of season three at this point. It's a completely different storyline at this point. But what you really get it is the motivation of really just the anger at heroes at this point, right?
One thing that I would like to add is at first I didn't like the bit with his dad. I thought it was tacked on, and I didn't really get the point of it.
Well, he let Gondor fall.
There's
so
a scene where Butcher really has
to over the fucking railing.
Yeah. If you let Gondor fall, if you're the sky, the steward of
Gondor,
you should have tossed that fucker over. There's a scene where he has to really be as bad as he can be, as bad as Butcher can be, and he got that from his father. And when he's threatening the old man and he's telling him the terrible, terrible things he's going to do to his daughter and to everyone else he's known, there's a little look in his eye where I can tell that he made peace with the fact that the monster that he is partly because of his dad. And that was why we had to have that set up. I really enjoyed that. Butcher being Butcher, kind of because of his dad being who his dad was. Old prick that he was.
All right, let's move on. What other boy do you guys want to talk about now?
Got to talk about the Deep at some point. Church of Science and the Church of...
the Church of Science.
Church of the Collective.
Collective. Yeah, I don't want to say Scientology because I don't want to get sued.
Yeah, so let's before we get into the heroes, let's keep on talking about the boys. I do agree with you, Tom, when it comes to Billy Joel. I love Huey, and I love that he is stuck on Billy Joel because I'm a huge Billy Joel fan, and I believe that Huey does get his second wind in this season.
Oh, no.
He actually probably gets his third and fourth wind because every time he starts to get his wind, somebody just knocks the shit out of him.
All right, I got to talk about this real quick. There's a very brief instance in the car where they're talking about the sex scene where Huey has sex with Starlight. And they talk about how the fact that it was going great until it went very, very wrong. And I watched the episode like three times. They don't show what went really, really wrong. But they do in the comic book. But why don't they show that in the TV show?
Well, there was two things. It didn't really go wrong in the comic book. It just, right, he didn't realize what wrong. Was going on.
Right.
And
so, but why didn't they acknowledge that? Because they just kind of allude to it very briefly.
Well, it could have been something else, because when they were having sex, remember her eyes started to glow?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was she could have just, like, launched Huey across the room from the orgasm.
She blinded him from the
Yeah.
I'm blind.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I go blind for like a minute 30 anyways. Why, you guys? Is that not normal?
I think that's from the Thompson's water seal, Tom.
Depends on your blood pressure.
Yeah. So in the comic book, she has her period while Huey is performing an oral act. And they show it very, very vividly in the comic book. And it's hilarious because Huey doesn't notice, and his friends kind of have to put it out to him.
Yeah, he answers the door, and Butcher's like, oh, yeah. Hi, hey, how's it going?
Hey.
But Huey, good, I guess. Huey is the moral compass for the boys. He tries to get them to do the right thing no matter what. And I think they have set up, again, the fall of Butcher perfectly, because we know that it's going to be Huey, his moral compass, who's actually going to have to put him down eventually. And I think he, like the boat scene where, you know, that helicopter crashes and he's like, we have to try to save him. And again, Butcher is only thinking about himself at that point. We gotta go. We gotta get out of here. People are coming. This is going to screw up our chances of ever getting away. And Huey's more concerned about whether those guys in the helicopter live or die. And he's constantly, to his own detriment, putting other people's safety above his. And I think he was ready to give up. I think he was ready to give up and have Starlight kill him. And I think he would have been welcomed that sweet relief in that sewer.
Sweet relief in the sewer.
Yeah.
I'd watch that movie.
You have watched that movie.
Speaking of sweet relief, we'll talk about Homelander later.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no, honestly, Huey is a lot of the reason that I scored it so high. And maybe it's because I also have an emotional attachment to Billy Joel. My mom introduced me to Billy Joel music. The Stranger was one of the first albums I remember hearing as a child. So I know most Billy Joel songs forwards and backwards. That's the soundtrack of my childhood. So the fact that he also had such an emotional attachment to it. Like, I really latched onto that and loved following Huey's journey through this season. I think Jack Quaid plays it perfectly. Maybe it's because he's the perfect amalgamation of his parents. You know, when he's doing the action scenes and he's being kind of funny, he looks like Dennis Quaid. But when he's in the emotional scenes, like, it's just straight Meg Ryan. And you know, I love that. I absolutely love Huey, especially in this season.
I did really enjoy Huey this season, and although I think Mike's correct in saying that that Butch is really the lead for the sort of the tail of the season. Mm-hmm. One of the things I have a very strong tendency to self-identify with Huey in this show, mostly because of the big mistakes I've made in my life, which makes me feel like Huey. Like, my big mistakes have always been, I think, when I try too hard to do the right thing, and I feel like I'm just riding that Huey roller coaster. And 2020, yeah, nice job, make you give me all the feels. For Huey, and I do like everything about the character, I think, and I particularly just like, I didn't think I was gonna like the actor at first, and maybe the first four or five episodes of the first season, I was kind of on the fence about the character, the actor who was actually playing Huey, and I can't remember, but there was one just simple moment, like in like episode 6 or 7, where it turned that switch for me, and I was like, I was wrong. I'm totally wrong. This kid is Huey. So, yeah, I have enjoyed him this season.
What were your guys' favorite Huey moment?
When Huey was just sitting in the whale, going, "I'm good. I'm good." And Mother is like, "We gotta go, we gotta go." And Huey was like, "Nope. I'm done." And he's really thinking about it. He's thinking about, this is it. I'm done. I'm done. And Mother sits with him for a second, and you know what? He gets that second win.
My favorite was when he's like, "Yeah, I'm totally done with all of this shit. I'm just going to move on to something else." And Starlight thinks that also means that he's done with her. And he's like, no, not you. You're the only thing I'm keeping. I'm not crazy. That's my favorite.
Yeah, he does know that he's hitting out of his weight class, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Stacey?
As a guy who's punching up, I got to say, keep going, Huey.
Just keep going.
You got this, buddy.
Stacey, what's your favorite Huey moment of the season?
I mean, there's so many little facial expressions that are my favorite, but I it's tied for two, so there's a funny one and an emotional one. But one is when he's sitting there with Lamplighter watching really weird...
Super porn.
And just being like, nope. And he's just like, you can't change the channel. And he really just wants to turn it off. And then, you know, as I mentioned, just his telling the story about his mom and Billy Joel, and like, what, you know, he's like, here's why the Billy Joel, here's why I have the musical taste of a, you know, a baby boomer. Because again, I super relate to that. I like new stuff, but a lot of my musical taste is influenced by my parents. So, yes. And his t-shirt collection.
I'm just
going
to add to that.
Oh my God.
Terrific t-shirt collection. Also, just want to add that sometimes you really do have to ask yourself, do you want to be the cuck or do you want to be the guy fucking the cuck's wife? I ask myself that every day. Like, there's no moral situation I can't get out of. Go, who do I want to be today?
Josh, did you have a favorite Huey moment?
I'm not confused with the where she was going to kill him in the sewers. That was this season, right?
Yeah.
When he was just right. Like, he was like, do it. He was just like, it's okay. I understand what's about to happen. And I'm just gonna surrender my life for yours. And you know what? I'm okay with that.
One last thing: the actor has chosen one weird thing that I think is like works really well for him. Some actors will always go to the same facial expression over and over again. In Party of Five, the main female character would always look down and sad. And like she would do that like five times in every episode, and I got sick of it. Huey's go-to look is a dog looking at a doorknob and not knowing how to use it. Like,
yeah.
Like he just this dog staring at a door like, if I could only figure out that doorknob. Like, there are a world of possibilities. It's just, the fuck does that doorknob do? And he does that like five times in that episode, and so far it has not gotten tiresome for me. Because Huey is out of his depth. He does not know what's going on. He is a white suburban kid living in the cellar of a crack house fighting superheroes. He should be looking at the world like it's a goddamn doorknob that he's never seen before. And he's got no thumb. It's a doorknob, man.
You got no thumbs. She was a nun.
Great. Hudson Hawk reference.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
For me, my favorite Huey moment was on the boat when he tries ineffectually to punch Butcher. Like, he hits him as hard as he can, and Butcher barely feels his, like, what the hell was that? That is my favorite Huey moment, because I think it really defines Huey's futility against the personality of Butcher. Like, he just can't win no matter what. So that was my favorite Huey moment. But let's talk about Mother's Milk, who finally... Sure. Finally, we get to see his daughter. We don't get to see his wife, but he's a very minor character this season. He doesn't have a lot going on, but I think the actor does a great job of being the first sergeant for this group of misfits, right? He's the top. He is the guy who looks out for all the enlisted while Butcher's off making all his fucking grand plans and stuff. It's Mother's Milk who is holding everybody together. What did you guys think about Mother's Milk this season?
So I really like the character, and I think you're right. He didn't get enough screen time, but he really did make a very solid effort at making his screen time count a lot. One of the things I still don't enjoy about Mother's Milk is because of the diversion from the comic, his nickname makes no fucking sense. It's not going to make any sense, and you just can't retro that fucking nickname. That seems horribly bizarre. But other than that, I think he had a few like really outstanding moments where he rallies the troops. He has a few outstanding moments where he basically tells both Butcher and Huey how the world needs to be for everyone to stay alive. And I really hope that he becomes more of a personality in the coming seasons. He's fantastic. And just as a sweeping generalization for the end, the last 5 minutes of season two, it's just a little. I did not enjoy the Brady Bunch roundtable, but maybe that's just me. Like everyone just sort of like went off to their happy place, and there was like some like really nice music going, and it was just a little.
Gonna rip that away from us.
Yeah,
I understand that. Like for the. I feel like for the listeners, you guys have been fooled by the network. But I mean,
you don't know the truth, man.
I know the truth, and I'm sorry. But yeah, I just feel like, it's just like honestly, it seems like five wasted minutes for me.
That is the point where I looked over at my wife and was like, "Are we still watching the same show? Because there's no way these people get happy endings, except for, you know, well, there's
Eddie,
plenty of people getting happy endings, but yeah.
$250. What are you, Eddie?
That's what I said. Did I just say that? Do you not have your gears on?
All right. Anybody else comments about Mother's Milk in this season? I did like how happy he was that Huey took down, or he thought took down Vought. Didn't work. But came damn close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Supermoto. He was like, fuck yeah, let's do this.
It's like, game on.
All right, the hell with Mother's Milk. Let's move on to Frenchie. We don't get Frenchie's fucked up backstory that they had in the comic book, but they do give him a definite backstory this time. I kind of missed the crazy backstory from the comic, but I understand this is a little more grounded series, kind of, I guess. What do you guys think about Frenchie's this season?
I really liked his trial and error when it came to connecting with the girl. I enjoyed them interacting. I enjoyed him giving up trying to be the savior. Sometimes you're not supposed to be the savior. Sometimes you're supposed to be the friend. And it takes someone like Frenchie wants to always be helping someone. It's not just part of their personality. It's almost a flaw. And for him to give that up after you listen to his backstory on the girl and instead try to be a friend to her is kind of a big step for him, and it also brings him a lot closer to the girl. And I enjoyed that. And I liked that the first sign she showed him was a gun. Made sense.
It was an easy one. Yeah.
As someone who speaks American Sign Language, that's not the easiest sign. The easiest sign ever is this one.
It's a podcast.
That's your finger on top of your fluttering finger. That's why I said it's one finger on top of a bunch of fluttering fingers, and that's helicopter. That's my favorite American Sign Language sign because I think it's so great.
Yeah, Frenchie this time gets to display his geniusness, right? Because he develops the weapons that they're going to use to take out Homelander and Stormfront. Well, not really take them out, but delay them.
Delay's pretty good, too.
Yeah. And he had a bunch of weapons that they thought might work, but unfortunately they were all left in the car.
Well, at least you got to use the sonic distraction.
Yeah.
So you got to see some of his, 50% of his shenanigans come to fruition.
Yeah, and unfortunately the car got MacGruber'd.
Yeah.
Spoiler!
Stacy, you got any opinions on Frenchie?
I think she's frozen, so... I think Frenchie... he has a very distinct role in this season, but in my opinion, not a great one.
Any kind of redemption? I mean, he has a lot of guilt, and then he gets to confront the person who caused a lot of that guilt, Lamplighter, and chooses not to kill him.
Yeah. Not really.
That's not so much a hero's journey as a recognition of his past. And that's something, too, but it's not really the hero's journey. But he does finally confront his pain. And that's sometimes the hero's journey.
It's pretty unsatisfactory that he had to kill Lamplighter, in my opinion. I get it. There's some sort of journey there. But at the end of the day, I really just wanted to see him murder Lamplighter.
Same. I did, too.
In an unusual way.
Oh, yeah. It's Frenchie. It should have been a very unusual way.
Super creative.
Do you guys think
Lamplighter... Probably a fake pussy with an explosive in it. I'm just saying.
Do you guys think Lamplighter's dead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Lamplighter is dead. Here's my theory. Remember in the comic?
You're all too often right with this. Now, don't get me wrong. I thought he was dead. But after the next 32 seconds, I'm probably going to agree with you. Go on.
One, fire is his whole deal, right? He can increase fire. I think that he has an immunity to fire a little bit.
It looked like he ripped his hand off.
He is probably still alive, but horribly burnt and disfigured. And I bet you we will see the Lamplighter zombie in the next season, because we can all agree that Black Noir is just a Homelander zombie, right?
Yeah, and we can also agree that what was the name of the Gamecock? We do need a Gamecock moment. Maybe he'll be like the new Gamecock.
It's a Blarney Cock.
Not Blarney Gamecock. Cock. Fine.
But he hasn't appeared here at all. Blarney but yeah, I agree. Well,
there was a character named Blarney Cock who was terribly wounded, and they had to feed in the cellar, and he was kind of like half zombie. And that could be Blair's role. I kind of like that, Mikey.
But I guess we shouldn't be talking about the heroes yet, or villains, kind of depending on your point of view. Let's go back to Kimiko, the girl. Stacy, you want to start us off?
Yes. Yeah, sure. I like her. I like the fact that she is an indiscriminate killing machine when she needs to be. But, you know, I do like that we learned a little bit more about her past. I loved the chemistry between her and Frenchie, and exactly what we're talking about with Frenchie, like trying to be her savior and her just being like, I don't need that. I just need somebody to connect with me in a different way. And the frustration of her trying to learn to write and to have a grasp of language. I mean, language is a thing that's very important to me. So, you know, the fact that she was trying to do that and also try to communicate with Frenchie, and the fact that the beauty of language is that it can be inclusive, but it can also be exclusive. And it was a way for her to shut him out because she wouldn't teach him how to communicate with her, because she could keep him at arm's length that way. She could just literally just be like, leave me alone. And here's what I'm saying, but you don't know what I'm saying. And there's a real beauty in that and a frustration. And I think they captured that beautifully.
Their relationship frustrates me in some way, and some way it's not ever what I would have thought for that character, having read the comic and seeing her come to the screen. I completely understand how the directors and writers wanted to do more with her, because mm-hmm. she's an interesting character.
Right.
And in a comic, I think they're allowed to have expression that's difficult to put on the big screen, and so you have to have language for an audience at some point.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely a big conundrum for the writers, and I think they handled it well. But somewhere deep in my soul, I really just want her to be the heartless killing machine, and she's just come a little too far for me. They've humanized her a little too much.
She's not as feral as you would like.
Yeah, I just need a cat with three legs who wants to murder Wolverine with his teeth. And that's what I want. That's what I want from her.
Well, she does become a killing machine at a certain point of this, right? She does take that contract out and goes and kills the Russians. My wife was looking at me going, what the fuck is going on? Where do these Russian dudes come from? And I'm like, just hold on, wait on, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. But still, yeah, I get it. I completely understand what they're doing, and I think given the base material they were handed, they're doing it very well. But still, there's something about it that doesn't sit 100% true with me.
Well, she's designed purposely to be this killing machine, right? That's her whole point. That's what the Shining Light did to her, was to make her a killing machine, to unleash her on the United States. And they tortured her in the process of doing it, and she is railing against her training, her nature that they inflicted upon her. So I think her not being the killing machine is her victory in a way. She tries to overcome that. She can't always do it. I mean, she wants revenge for the boy, right? Her brother, Kenji, right? But I do have to say, my favorite moment was when they just started kicking the shit out of
Stormfront.
Stormfront.
Girls get it done.
Yeah, that like they you know, I like that they're, you know, taking turns beating her and stuff, but as soon as she gets on the ground and they're just like, we are just gonna stomp this bitch. Bam, bam, bam. I thought it was amazing.
I thought it was a good scene, and I was gonna talk about that later when it comes with other characters, but I have to say It wasn't brutal enough for me. I can't, like, there just needed to be something, there really needed to be something added to that scene. It felt, honestly, it felt soft. Like, I wanted to see Stormfront hurt. And I didn't get that from the scene. They missed something there. They really just missed an emotional outreach to the audience where Stormfront really felt like she was going to die and had to get out of there. And I think they sort of skipped that.
So what you're telling me is you didn't like the Nazi character and you really wanted to see her suffer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm shocked. You are so in the minority here, Josh. It's dumbfounding. Is Stormfront dead?
No.
Absolutely no, of course not.
And my wife is like, oh, they killed Stormfront. I'm like, nah, probably very likely not.
No, she just has no limbs. There's zero chance of her dying at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Zombie Stormfront.
Yeah, per comic history. Every character who has ever had limbs ripped off comes back later on, good or bad.
Dark Stormfront. And you know what I love? The
Dark Stormfront.
Because they have, it's all Billy Joel reference, the fact that her name is Stormfront.
Yeah.
I know it's from, I just love that. The only way it would have been better if they had a character called an innocent man.
Or the Downeaster Alexa.
I was going to say Alexa the Fisher person, but whatever.
River of Dreams.
So let's go on
Uptown Girl pretty much writes herself, too.
Let's go on to the heroes, who are not really heroes. We just started talking about Stormfront. I thought that the writers of this show were like, yeah, let's do a Nazi. I think this is a very appropriate time to have a Nazi out there when she tells the kid that...
Screaming fake news?
There is a white genocide going on.
Oh, God.
And even Stormfront was like, wait, what?
Yeah, Homelander was...
like, he was like, raised eyebrow, like, what are we talking about?
So
that kind of reminded me of that moment when Joker and the Red Skull had teamed up, and Joker was like, wait, you're a Nazi? I thought this whole thing was like a gimmick. Like, I'm still an American, pal. I'm not gonna fucking hook up with a Nazi. He punches out Red Skull. I was hoping we were gonna have that moment, because that would have been awesome for me.
Yeah, Homelander's too weak for that.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk more about Stormfront. What did you guys think of her, LT?
I mean, I thought she was really well done. I love the fact that they were pretty much using a lot of Republican speak. I mean, you know, thoughts and prayers.
They were using the coded language.
News?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were using the coded language that is constantly being barraged. Which it kind of leads us to the one character who doesn't even get a name, who is probably has the most impact in just, 45 seconds, a minute of screen time? I'm talking about Fat Neil.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was chilling.
Yeah, I posted about that. Like,
Josh, you want to talk about that?
So, I believe it's episode 7, so it's the episode before the finale. And say the first five, and this is pre-credits, this is before they give the credits, this is the opening scene. And yeah, Mike, I would never have picked him out if you hadn't mentioned this, by the way. So the actor who played Fat Neil Community was playing a character who every day sees the propaganda of the day. He goes into his local shop, and that shop owner is an immigrant. He goes to work, and his bosses are persons of color or women, and every interaction he has is sort of that very oppressive, typical talking point where you are just you are not the privileged human being that a white peer, that a white male is in society, and everything is keeping you down. And he sees this day after day, and they do this really succinct and beautiful montage of how modern media can infect people who just don't have the capacity to understand and cope. And eventually they have a brief moment where he buys a gun, and a brief moment where he thinks he sees the immigrant shop owner's eyes glow. And then one day he is just walking through the store after having seen a story about how they are under attack and he is under attack and the world is against every white man on the planet. And he just walks in, and in a moment, it's not even fury, it's just release, and he shoots him in the head.
And it's very poignant.
It is it is a very dark elegance to that beginning. And when I said in the beginning the highs of this season were much higher than the first season, that's what I was talking about. Like, there are peaks in this season where they do such an amazing job with their show. I mean, and I say overall the average was of the first one was better, but yeah, one of the that episode, those 5 or 6 minutes, I mean, hit me pretty hard, I have to say.
Charlie Kuntz is the actor, and I think he needs to work a lot more, because I think he literally stole the series in just that little time. Very little dialogue, but his facial expressions conveyed the frustration that he was feeling about his powerlessness in his own life, and it conveyed it through, I've got to do something, so I'm going to do what everybody's telling me to do. It was a great scene. Well, not a great scene, but a powerful scene.
Yeah, powerful scene. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the Deep. Is there any... I mean, Aquaman gets shit on all the time, and he is... And the Deep is no different. Finds out that his parents are the one who fucked him with this horrible power to hear sea creatures and talk to them. That gives him the gills... and, you know, kudos to Patton Oswalt for playing the gills in his peyote trip. But Eric Kripke, the showrunner, I think hates sea life. Because the first season, they do that poor fucking dolphin who he's trying to save. And then now the whale.
Can I just get a little physics, though? Come on with the whale. That was one of the things that really kind of irritated me. Like, I don't want 100% believability, but give me 50% of the way there. There's no way that fucking boat with that mass at that rate would fucking... They would have bounced off that whale, and that whale would have been like, what?
What?
Stop it. Get back in your boat.
That was bad. That was weird physics.
Oh, but maybe one of the Deep superpowers that he doesn't realize is to cause weakness in the structure of all sea life as he talks to him.
Maybe he can explode sea life. Yeah. I don't know. If he can, fine. If he cannot, not fine.
You gotta admit, though, it's pretty scary when you saw all those sharks following the boat. There's a lot of sharks.
If I was in that boat, I'd be like, what the fuck?
When they were like, get into the smaller boat.
Sharks.
What? No.
Get into the smaller boat. Are you nuts?
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Anybody want to explain what the deal with Fanta is? Because I can't figure it out.
Fresca, sorry.
No, I can't figure it out. I was going to ask.
At first,
guys,
I thought it was drugged.
I thought somebody else here would know.
At first, I thought like the Fresca was drugged, and that's how they were like getting the Deep into the cult. Was that it was kind of like roofing him at first, but then it didn't appear like that was the case.
No, I think it's like a Pavlovian response. Like, he's in a low place, and when he first gets there, they're being very kind to him, and they hand him a Fresca. And every time he starts to get a little bit frustrated, what do? They offer him a Fresca. It's like, if he gets a Fresca, he kind of calms down, maybe? I don't know.
It's got to be something there, right? There's either something we're missing or something they're going to freaking rip out in some scene. But there's something with the Fresca, and it's freaking me out a little bit. Like, this...
Felt like...
I kind of like Fresca. Not anymore. I'm not fucking drinking that shit.
I love Fresca. That's my thing. Not anymore. I still like
Fresca. You can't
love
it? That shit's going to fuck you
right
up.
Now, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. You say that now.
I think it's okay if you buy it yourself. If somebody else offers it to you, run.
Yeah.
Get away from
I'm
going
to offer it to Tom all the time.
Yeah, I'll drink it. I like Fresca.
Say, would you like a Fresca?
I have a
After somebody gives him criticism, I'll be like, Tom, do you want a Fresca?
You better have a fucking Fresca if you do that shit, dumbass.
It just felt like conditioning, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's up with it. Mike, I just assumed you would know, honestly. At the beginning of the podcast, I was like, I'm going to ask about Fresca. And the only person who's going to get this is Mike.
So the actor who plays A-Train...
I think it just represents the otherness of the cult. Like, no one's go-to drink is Fresca. But it's the cult's go-to drink. And I think it just represents the otherness of the cult.
Well, Fresca was really popular, it was in the 90s, probably. And it was really, really...
80s.
Yeah, so maybe it's also a nod to this cult being on its way out. It's outdated.
Sure, that's a good, I like that. That's a good take too.
So the actor who plays A-Train tweeted that, I assure you, Fresca is a plot point. I don't know if he's just fucking with people or not.
I hope he is. Honestly, I hope it's become nothing, and they never talk about it ever. And all that happens is the fucking actors tweet about it. That would be amazing.
I tell you what, if Fresca paid for that product placement, they are getting their fucking money's worth.
Yeah. I have talked more about Fresca in the last month than I probably have my whole life.
I think I've talked more about Fresca than I've ever drank Fresca.
Yeah.
I had a Fresca and gin yesterday, and I call it a comeback. And it's refreshing and delicious.
Hey, don't call it a comeback.
I know I'm not supposed to call it that.
Tom, if you put an ice cube in it, it's called Don't Call It a Comeback.
Doom, Josh, for the win. Boom.
But that was
nailed it.
But Ice Cube didn't do it.
Who was that?
It was LL Cool J.
Fuck.
If you put an ice cube in it.
Boom. If you put an ice cube in it, you call it a good day.
Good day, sir.
All right. Well, let's move on to Homelander. All right. Everybody's excited first.
When he jerked off into the city, on top of that building, off of the gargoyle, it should have made a sound, and it should have been bang.
God.
That's true. I mean, there's no doubt it should have been a sonic boom. Yeah. But honestly, the sonic boom they're giving him, considering his personal mass, is overplayed anyway.
So
I mean, physics-wise.
That scene was filmed for the first season. And the network would not allow them to put it in there. And Kripke filmed it anyways and was like, oh, we're going to get it in there. We're going to get it in there. So
we're
if you
getting
look,
it in there somewhere.
Yeah. That
sounds
was just
like
yeah. Homelander is awesome. I will say this because Homelander is the villain who doesn't want to be the villain. He wants desperately to be the hero of his story. And he actually, I don't think he realizes that he's the villain. Like, even when he's menacing the Becca, you know, ooh, I'll take some pancakes. You don't want to learn Spanish. This is America. Come on, let's go outside and play. When he throws the kid off the roof, all of these things say that he's the villain, but I don't think he sees himself as the villain at all. I think he just sees himself as a loving, caring dad, and that's because he never had one. So he doesn't know the appropriate way to treat people.
good villains never think they're villains.
Yeah, no. But that's what makes them a good villain, though, right?
I'm going to check the box that says somewhat agree. So, I think Homelander knows he's wrong. He knows something is wrong. He hasn't figured it out. He's trying.
But every once in a while, he loves to roll in his cropulence.
Oh, don't get me wrong.
He kills that guy in the alley,
and that comes from other people's grace, right? Homelander wants the sunlight, but when he does things, I think he understands he's confused and wrong. He understands he doesn't know what he's doing, and he looks to other people. I think Homelander is more like the deadly toddler, right? So he's just dancing around with a knife, and he's just happy to be there. And he doesn't care if he has a knife duct taped to his hand. He's just fucking happy to be there, right? Like, just flailing around sometimes.
And occasionally
he gets it, and occasionally he does not. So I'm not sure if they've painted him the complete villain as of yet. But I'm, as a side note, the actor playing Homelander is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has a range of psychosis to warmth that you don't find, and he has to do that wearing a cape and a body tight suit. Like, he's not doing that in PJs and a t-shirt. That guy is nailing it.
Have you seen that guy in glasses?
I haven't seen him, honestly. I haven't seen him anywhere.
This motherfucker,
has he done anything else we'd ever recognize?
He was in a photograph with every single other person in the cast, and he's sitting there with glasses and a cardigan on. My wife and I both go, "Who's that asshole?" He fucked Tony Clark Kent to us.
We'd recognize?
Just that
before
picture?
No. I mean,
I don't know. There was a cast photo of him. So apparently the actor is very short, and because he's playing Homelander, so they were going to put him in platform boots, or they were going to put him in boots, and he asked to be put in platform heels. And there's a photo of him with like these fucking Dr. Frankenfurter. Like platform boots.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Carl Urban is not short.
No.
Like, he's a big guy. Urban's probably 6'3 or 6'4, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen him from afar. And yeah, I was he's a big dude.
These are like Dolly Parton height heels. Like, they're very large.
Yeah.
But I agree to an extent with what you're saying, Josh. I can see he's of at least two minds about things. Like, he knows how to be adored. That's, you know, once he got his powers, everybody loved him, everybody gave him everything he wanted, and so he gets that. But then when he tries to have relationships with people, he's had either little experience or bad experiences, and so, you know, people who have had bad experience after bad experience after bad experience in relationships, when they get into what could be a good relationship, they don't know how to act. They just sort of they just sort of melt down, or they become a negative thing. Like, they become abusive or manipulative, or they shut down, or, you know, there's any number of ways it could go. And you see that in Homelander, and I hate that he has human qualities, because he is the character that I love to despise. Like,
yeah.
I fucking hate that guy, but that's the nature of a good character. And this season, like, I really enjoyed hating him as much as I did, but also seeing this broken person in so many ways, like just the way that he has, the character's name is escaping me, but, you know, has this guy morph into breast milk and all. Oh my God. Like, it's just like, oh, this fucking guy. But then you're like, well, I kind of feel sorry for him because he's not really equipped to be a person. Like, he's just, they literally conditioned him to be Homelander and that's it.
Yeah, every relationship that he's had is based on fear. Everybody who deals with him is afraid of him. The only one who wasn't afraid of him was Elizabeth Shue's character in the first season. And she was able to control her heartbeat around him, which is why he was attracted to her. And she was able to control him because she didn't show any fear whenever she dealt with him. She kept calm the whole time. But everybody else up until Stormfront is afraid of him. Stormfront's the first person who he feels like he can have an actual relationship with. She just happens to be a horrible Nazi. But he's willing to overlook that because it's finally a relationship where it's not based on fear.
Right.
And then when she... Go ahead, Tom.
I was just about to say, we also have to just talk a little bit about Doppelganger.
Who is shocked that he didn't have Doppelganger suck his cock as Homelander? I am.
Why? Blah, blah.
It's not gay if it's yourself, right?
Yeah. If so, I'm the gayest guy on the planet. I should be leading the pride parade.
You have led a pride parade, let's be serious.
I have been in the Dykes on Bikes parade.
It's close. I won't say it's close.
All right, we're going really long. Let's just talk about some of our favorite moments of the other characters. Go ahead, Tom.
Just real quick, you asked me if we can find anything on Anthony Starr that we've seen in the past. I found a picture of him in Xena Warrior Princess. I'll put it up on our Facebook page, and I put it up in our chat for everyone else to see. But it doesn't look anything like the character, and that's kind of my point. This guy is terrific at disguising himself when it comes to becoming Homelander. If you see just a picture of the actor, Anthony Starr, doesn't look anything like the Homelander. And I think that's a real credit to him. And when I say David in Xena Warrior Princess, I mean as in David and Goliath. He plays David going against Goliath, and Xena the Warrior Princess has to help him out in his, let's say, biblical journey to redemption. And other characters that are great. There are so many other great characters.
Yeah, I love Queen Maeve.
Maeve has a great story arc, right? She kind of finally stands up to Homelander. I love that Homelander outs her just out of the blue to be a dick, right? But he really does. I think he believes that he was actually trying to help her. Now, granted, it was his own personal self-interest because they were like, where's the diversity? He's like, well, we got a black guy. And we got, we got Black Noir. He's not really anything. And she's a lesbian. Yeah. Which she's not, by the way. I love that, too. Look.
Yeah. Me too. I was about to say that I love the fact that they talk about how easy it is to package a lesbian rather than someone who's bisexual. And that's a huge problem in Hollywood right now. Bad girls are bisexual. If you look at Batman, female villains, a lot of them are bisexual because. This is hard to explain. I've been having trouble wrapping my head around the trope. But bad girls are bisexual. Good girls are lesbians. And that seems evil in my mind. I can only think of a handful of bisexual characters who are good, and they are few and far between.
Well, I think that follows your usual,
the usual arc, absolutely.
Yeah, the usual arc. Mm-hmm. They're just behind the norm, catching up, doing their thing. Slow, shitty progress.
Slow, shitty progress.
Lesbians are in the mainstream. Bisexuals, not so much.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, we have a good representation of a bisexual character.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I was about to say Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It's Hip to Be By, one of the best songs of season two.
So while we're talking about other characters, I think we should shout out to Black Noir. The fact that he was constantly grabbing Mounds bars, which could kill him, and not eating them, but thinking about it every time because he really likes the taste, but he has a severe peanut allergy, is awesome.
So the problem with that is Mounds bars don't have peanuts in them. They have almonds, and almonds are not
tree nuts. Yeah,
he's allergic.
Now,
to
peanuts
tree
are legumes. They're generally not the same allergy.
Well, she says tree nuts. She says he's allergic to tree nuts.
Coconuts. Right. Coconuts. Tree nuts.
Well, Almond Joy. So she gave him an Almond Joy.
Oh, Mounds.
Mounds don't have nuts.
Yeah.
No, Mounds have. Mounds have nuts.
Almond Joy's got nuts.
Oh, it has nuts. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Okay. And maybe I got the song backwards.
Sometimes you feel like anaphylactic shock. Sometimes you don't.
Oh, okay.
Stacy for the win.
I loved Black Noir's scene where he's going through the terrorists, just killing them all, and then when he sees the little kid, even though he's, like, carrying the kid's dad's head, he's like, oh, here's a little toy. Boop. I was thinking, oh, man, this Black Noir is going to kill this kid with the head. That's what I thought he was going to do.
With the head of his father.
Or put on a little puppet show with the rabbit interacting with the head.
That's what I was thinking he was going to do next. I think he was going to be like, boop. And then he was going to be like, boop, boop.
I find it a little unbelievable that Black Noir got spotted on that rooftop. You're supposed to be a super villain, super secret-y, stealthy guy. I saw you up there.
It was daytime in a suburban neighborhood.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Archer?
What?
Can we talk about the Archer?
Sure.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I like that the Deep is like, I fucking talk to fish. You shoot arrows. There's a big difference when it comes to Compound V fucking up your life.
Seriously, one's superpower, one is not.
Yeah. You have a skill. I don't think you even got any any Compound V.
I have superpower. He revealed zero superpowers.
Super accuracy might be would be a superpower.
We'll have to ask Diane because she is our expert on archers. If Eagle the Archer is an actual has actual Compound V or not?
I have watched a recent video of a guy on YouTube who fucking does shit with arrows. And if there are superpowers, then that guy has a fucking superpower. I'm sorry, I have seen him throw like 2 coins into the air and pin both to a log.
Wow.
This
guy's got a fucking superpower. If superpowers exist, and that guy's a super archer, then that guy's a fucking superhero.
Our favorite Our favorite character from the comics makes an appearance, and it is not what I thought it was going to be. Fucking Love Sausage.
Love Sausage? What the hell? I was wondering when we'll break this up.
So, I was listening to an interview. Apparently, Mother's Milk did not figure out from the script what was going to happen in that scene. The guy who plays Butcher, why am I drawing a blank on his name? Carl Urban was like, oh, you ready to get choke on a cock? And he's like, what are you talking about? And you're like, you didn't read the script, did you?
You, sir. Did not read the script.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Love Sausage.
Let's just go.
That was pretty great.
So we've been covering The Boys season 2. We've been going on and on. Let's get some final thoughts on The Boys season 2. Give me something that we haven't mentioned yet that you just loved, and one thing that you were like, I really didn't like that. Start with LT.
I really loved what they did with Blind Spot and
Blind Spot?
What?
Who's Blind Spot? Spot?
He's the Blind guy Spot who's was crying
the, out for the. Oh, yeah, all right.
The seven. And Homelander just crushes him by killing his superpower. And I wasn't too crazy with the way that they killed off Becca. I having the kid do it, I just felt was probably not the best way of doing it.
Well, he did kill her.
For like a catharsis. Yeah.
I mean, technically, it was Stormfront's hand going into her throat as it got blown off.
Yeah.
It's a bank shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He banked that shot. I love that we finally got to see the Terror. I wanted way more Terror, but I love that we got to see the Terror. I love watching Homelander jerk off into the night. I can do whatever I want. And I love the roadmap to the next season, because we can see everyone's going to be doing new things, hopefully interesting things. Butcher might be heading a real department. They're going to have to call the boys back together. Huey's advancing as a person. It'll be a fun season. How about you, Josh?
I'm not sure what my favorite scenes were. I think clearly, I know we're not supposed to talk about something we talked about. I'm just going with that scene in season 7 really just like hit me in the feels and gave me I think I went back and watched like another 2 or 3 episodes before that to see if it was like anything I missed. Like it was like bam, and you were like, oh man, really? Did I miss something?
Just that one thing to that reminded me a little bit of Manchester by the Sea, where they're once again showing him, I know I've said this a couple times, but they're showing him shovel that same like 4-foot area over and over again, and it shows the bleakness of New England life. I think they did a great job of showing Fat Neil's the bleakness of his life. Like, you know, you're a young lion, you're a white male in America, you're supposed to be at the top, and you are not, sir. And why is that? And I thought they showed how that kind of incel mentality can take over someone's life when they have nothing to cling to.
And I think the other thing was the sort of the language interpretation between the female and Frenchie was fantastic. And I really there was something else I wanted there, but it was I just think when they look at those comics and they do what they did and they change the life of the characters by not having them be super at this point really made it feel like a prequel to me, but it also made me feel like they understood the characters and they were building something for them for an audience that hadn't read the comics, and I really appreciate that in the writing.
What about you, Stacey?
I mean, stuff that we haven't talked about. We didn't really talk about Annie, which
is she okay? She okay?
Is she okay?
Is she okay?
I would say my least favorite thing in the season involves her, and that's part of that feeling at the end of the season where everything, not everything, but some things felt wrapped up in a tight little bow. It didn't feel genuine to me that she would reconcile with her mom. I get that, oh, they went through this traumatic thing and all of that, but I think there's still some stuff to work through there. I don't think a horrific experience at Vought would undo all those years of trauma that Annie has experienced. I did like the kind of the story. We also didn't really talk about A-Train either, but I liked, sure. That he was trying to be the canary in the coal mine with the church and just being like, what is this? And do you want a Fresca? No, I don't want a fucking Fresca. Like, he was kind of the guy being like, you guys know this is bullshit, right? Like, you get it, right? And then, you know, him trying to get back into 7 and Vought just being like, yeah, just kidding, you don't really just do that anymore. So that was the things we didn't talk about. I really enjoyed a lot of A-Train's scenes.
I agree with you. The stuff with her mom kind of fell flat for me. But I liked the assistant who takes over as PR person for the Seven and how she's losing her fucking hair. She's just so frustrated because she's like, "You got to do this," and they're all like, "Fuck you! I'm leaving. Bye." Yeah.
Well, also Newman. Like, we didn't really talk about Newman being, you know, she's supposed to be this kind of. She looks like, you know, this progressive, you know, person.
AOC. She looks AOC.
She's AOC, and then she ends up being fucking villain. And, like,
yeah, working for Vought the whole time.
Vought. Yeah, working for Vought the whole time.
Wait, so. Is she?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know for certain.
Is she?
Yes.
Is she? Sure.
Vought is controlling both sides of the political argument.
Yeah. I understand.
So they win either way.
No, there's two sides of the political argument. But I'm not 100% convinced she's Vought controlled.
Well, whatever it is, even if it... Either way, it was like, oh, good, there's somebody like an AOC kind of, yeah, that's hopeful. And then it was just like, yeah, fuck that.
But she blows up people's brains.
Yeah, your feelings don't matter.
You blow people's heads, but, you know, whatever.
She kills the head of the Church of Collective after he tells her that they have all this information on all the heroes.
After.
Yeah. And she's
killed. After told.
What? Yeah.
After the information that's given out. If you
no, not all the information. He says he has information on all the heroes.
Yeah.
And she kills him for that.
No. She kills him after he reveals he has the information.
Right. He reveals he has the information. That's why I'm saying she works for Vought. If he has all the information and
she would have killed him before then.
She didn't know he had the information until he says it. And then once he says
almost,
he has to be eliminated.
It. No.
Yeah.
It could also be she killed him because he wanted a tax break for the church.
Or
so maybe she is more of an AOC.
Or maybe if he has information on all the heroes, maybe he knows that she has superpowers.
Yeah.
That could be
it. Maybe.
That's Mike's usually right about these things.
Either way, I'm glad he's dead.
I think she's dancing the dance, my friend.
She's an interesting character for sure. I'm excited to see more. And now Huey is the. Yeah, I'd love to be able to explode people's heads. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't know.
It's not my top five. It's
Stacey,
it's
honestly,
not my top
if I five. I wouldn't know anybody. Like.
All right. Well, we're going.
Only one head I'd like to explode.
Many times.
I mean, it'd be
the
podcast.
I would kill you.
An empty planet. We'd have no listeners.
All right, well, we are going very long. We're going to skip the front and the back of the long box. We've already done our 3 to 18. Let's go straight to plugs.
Okay.
So, Stacey, you were talking about some podcast other than ours? How dare you?
How dare you?
I'm going to say I'm popular. Yeah, so my friend Cody does a podcast called Reboots and Dragons. And yeah, so it's a podcast about playing D&D in some of your favorite or maybe not favorite movies. They've done movies like Terminator, Dragnet, which is one of my favorite series of episodes, Quarantine, all kinds of movies that they've rebooted in the Dungeons and Dragons universe. And it's a super unique concept, and it's a lot of fun to listen to.
The doppelganger was Kaiser Soze. It was Kaiser Soze. I don't believe in Kaiser Soze.
It's not Kaiser Soze.
It's not Kaiser Soze. It's a boogeyman. I'd like to plug my neighborhood gaming shop, which is Alpha and Omega Gaming. They sold me a little piece of plastic, which I paid $30 for. Then I glued together. Then I painted. And now I play with. Alpha and Omega. Thanks.
I'd like to plug GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hello, Tammy.
Stace, you gotta get a voice in there, buddy. Come on.
Oh, sorry. GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com. For bears to find t-shirts, stained glass prints, and other geeky things such as socks, baseball hats, you name it, they got it. GeekOrthodox.com.
I just got my order from GeekOrthodox.com because they were having a sale because of New York Comic Con not being New York Comic Con. So I got myself a Blessed Are the Geek sweatshirt. It looks awesome and is super comfy.
It is nice.
Send me a picture. I'll put it up on our website.
You mean on our Twitter, at the Long Box Guys? Or are you referring to our Patreon page? Patreon.com/TheLongBoxGuys, where for a mere $1 a month, 25 cents, maybe 20 cents depending on the month, a week, you can get an extra podcast almost every week called The Geek Leak. Tom, you do an excellent job taking care of that Patreon page. And more importantly, all the money that we get from that Patreon page goes to the Elizabeth Peabody House where Tom works at the food bank.
That's right. I've just bought and I just have received two books that Elizabeth Palmer Peabody wrote on the early abolitionist movement here in Boston, Massachusetts, and the greater Massachusetts area, and her thoughts on kindergarten. A little known fact, Elizabeth Palmer Peabody, one of the first people to travel to Germany, see the early kindergartens in Germany, and bring them back to the United States. Elizabeth Palmer Peabody, I really feel this is a worthy cause and a great woman to emulate. Elizabeth Palmer Peabody. I am her cuck.
And I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at KirbyCracklemusic.com. And also our fellow podcasters like Seth and the Boys over at WhosNextGaming.com, where I don't know if you guys have checked out, they just did reviewed The Evil Dead on their Movies So Bad They're Good podcast.
Has anyone told them they're like 30 years late on
that? It's still a good movie.
It's absolutely a great movie.
There are a lot of blind spots in people's radar. Like that, one of my coworkers today told me he's never seen Ghostbusters.
Well, that guy's a monster and he should be drowned in a pile of his own feces and then beaten to death at the head of a horse.
Lainey has never even heard of Kelly's Heroes. Lainey had never even heard of Kelly's Heroes. Like, she never even heard the movie described to her.
She just thought they sold roast beef in Revere because she's from Massachusetts. But other than that, can you do?
Damn right.
So my for this week is I have to promote Downwind Kites. Rogers, go to at Downwind Kites on Facebook or downwindkites.com on ye old internet. And find our friend Mark because he loves kites. He lived in California for a long time and then Hawaii for some time. He flies kites, and I love kites. And honestly, I used to fly a lot of two-stringers in my day. And when I first started two-stringers, it was in California. And I was at a kite shop on a beach in California and said, what's the best two-string kite for a starter? Like the guy who just wants to get out there and not break shit. And he's like, it's called a Dynakite. It's from a town you have never heard of. It's called Three Rivers, Massachusetts.
And that's a true story.
What?
We grew up a town over.
Like, I could literally piss into Three Rivers, Massachusetts.
We could crash this kite from my house into Three Rivers.
Into Three Rivers. And so absolutely every time every professional kite shop I've ever been to, if you've ever asked for a recommendation on where to go to, it's Dynakite. So go to our friend's shop at downwindkites.com. Get yourself a starter to a two-stringer. It's a great hobby. Your kids will love it. It's amazing. And help out Mark because he's a good guy.
Yeah, I sure got a two-stringer. I bought a dragon kite from him, and it's terrific. But I do miss playing around with the two-stringers.
They're awesome.
It is a lot of fun, and in a world where so much is closed because of COVID, just going out into a field with somebody else and flying a kite, it's a really good way to while the way the hours without being depressed about not being able to go out and see movies or hang out with people in large gatherings.
Yeah, and if you do it at night, it's kind of creepy.
And if you do it in a rainstorm, it's very scientific.
Science. You got a redhead stepchild you don't like? Science.
So, Josh, let me ask you a question. Three Rivers, Massachusetts. Is that your sector?
Oh, yeah. As long as you're flying a kite, that's my sector.
LT, got any words of wisdom for us?
Well, you know, I think if Billy Butcher were an actual person, he would say, don't be a cunt. Vote for somebody other than Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, I bet you he would have loved to smack Mitch McConnell in the face when he laughed about not passing any coronavirus
relief. Yes.
Yeah, Stacy, got some words of wisdom for us?
You know, this week I do, and it's about voting, not just against Mitch McConnell, but let's vote all of these motherfuckers out. Vote early. Vote on election day. Mail in your vote. However you need to vote, just vote.
I think we're going to see the largest turnout in American history.
Good call.
I hope so.
Hey, Tom, what is it that you always say?
Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live longer. And my good friend Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And on that note, we'll say goodbye. Goodbye, everyone, and thanks again for listening.
Love you. Bye-bye.